Money, Riches, and Wealth is sponsored by the Financial Consulate.
Say you don't need no diamond rings, and I'll be satisfied. Tell me that you want the kind of things the money just can't buy. I don't care too much for money. Money can buy me love.
This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
This is Drew Tignanelli here, Money, Riches, and Wealth, calling in from Florida and saying hello to all my good friends in Maryland. I've got a great co-host with me tonight, one you've not met yet, Alex Price.
Yeah, it only took, what, about 4 years to get me down here?
You know, you like that Hartford County thing, you know, you're not coming down here. And he's a Dolphin fan. We're not going to hold that against him. He was brought up that way. You know, his father taught him how to be a Dolphin fan. So we're not going to hold it against you, Alex.
Yeah, I'm waiting for that jersey to come up from your address there. So I'll send a top three players for you to send up my way.
All right, well, we're on an open show tonight, 410-922-6680. 410-922-6680. If you weigh, you get to call in, direct the conversation of our show tonight, saying, you know, hey, this is what I want to talk about, because if you can help me and answer this question, this would be extremely helpful to me. And also, you know, just before I did the show, I just did a call with somebody who wanted to find out more about our company. And his name was Peter. He says he listens to us every Wednesday night as he goes home. And I appreciate that, Peter, and thank you for calling in. I mean, or thank you for listening. You know, we hope that the show is educational, entertaining, and truly beneficial to all of our listeners. Even if it's only 10 of you out there, we still enjoy the opportunity to do this and demonstrate what true professional advice should all be about. Comprehensive, true comprehensive advice with independence, with being a fiduciary at all times, working only in the client's best interest. That's what a true professional should be doing. And anyway, we appreciate that. And so we're on an open show tonight, Alex, 410-922-6680. Do I see you got somebody?
Yep, it's starting off quick here.
Starting off quick. That's because they knew you were here, Alex.
They wanted to get right to it.
They probably want to talk about the Dolphins or something, you know?
Oh, I don't think we have enough time. But so we got Joe and Rogers Forge here asking about unemployment taxes. Joe and Rogers Forge, how can we help you?
If it's a fact, if for 2021 filing in 2022, if unemployment is taxable for federal and state.
At this point in time, yes.
Okay.
So right now, the federal, at least, and I'm not 100% positive on the state of Maryland, but the federal government for 2022 unemployment compensation is not yet a permanent tax-free situation for the federal government. So,
well,
go ahead.
Well, when I said 2022, I meant that for 2021 income that I will be filing in January of 2022. That's what I meant.
Okay, for 2021, it is tax-free.
Okay, well, let me start over. I'm sorry. The unemployment compensation that I received for 2021, when I file my taxes in 2022,
it'll be tax-free.
Okay, and that federal and state, or just the state?
Federal and state.
Wow. All right, thank you very much. That's great.
But, you know, there's certain income rules too, though, remember. $150,000 federal, $100,000 state. A little complicated, though, when the state excludes the first $10,000 for the federal, and only $10,000 for the federal, too, also. So keep that in mind. Maryland will exclude the whole thing if you're under $100,000. Fed only excludes the first $10,000. And whether Maryland will accept that first $10,000 if your income's under $150,000, that's how ridiculous stuff gets, Joe. You know?
Yeah, well, I don't have to worry about that part.
Okay, well, then if you don't have to worry about that, then I think you're good, my friend, okay?
All right. Thank you very much, Drew.
All right. Good. Good talking to you. And we're on an open show tonight. Like Joe, he says, you know, this is what's important to me. This is what I want to talk about. 410-922-6680. You know, the other thing about my friend here, Alex Price, is he's also a Ricky Fowler fan. I mean, the guy just has a propensity for cheering for.
You're bringing out all the redeeming qualities right now, Drew. They're getting a good picture as to what my weekends look like.
Anyway, he's the guy that loves teams that have a great opportunity to win.
Yeah, I like the thrill of the chase, not just the win. I like the chase too. So we got another one here, Drew, already coming in here about 1031 exchanges.
1031 exchanges. I like that. Okay. Who we got? Is there not on yet?
Hello, this is Tim.
Hey, Tim. How you doing?
Good. I'm a regular listener, and welcome your new guest. And I've asked you a couple questions in the past about 1031s, and I'm getting a little bit confused. I've got a property that I had for over 30 years as a rental. Went vacant a couple years ago. I've done some renovation work to it, and it's due to sell in a few months. After paying the renovation work and everything, I'm looking to, you know, net maybe $150,000. But I'm getting a little bit confused on the terminology equal or greater value. And it basically is that it says that the 1031 exchange must not generate a gain to the investor, which means the replacement property.
So let's say you sell your house for $300,000. And you only make a gain of $100,000, you still have to buy a $300,000 property in order to defer the full gain.
Okay. So even if I have expenses on the closing statement that might add up to $100,000.
Well, you can take the expenses off. So in other words, if you sell it for $300,000 and expenses bring it down to $285,000, you can buy a new place for $285,000 and be clear that you're buying a comparable or higher value.
Okay. But Mike,
and you can also do this. You can also do this. It was Steve, right?
Oh, Tim.
I was real close.
There's close.
A T. Yeah, there is a T in Steve, right? So anyway, yeah. Tim, you can also buy a place for you could put your $150,000 profit in and then leverage another $150,000, buy a place for $300,000, and still be qualified. And there's also a thing called a Delaware Statutory Trust that you ought to learn about.
Yeah, you mentioned that a time before.
Yeah.
But
sometimes these Delaware Statutory Trusts have leverage in them also that would give you the $300,000, even though you only put $150,000 in it.
Yeah. See, my dilemma is that I have a lot of costs that I paid out of on the property in the last year, well over almost $150,000, let's say. So if I'm selling for $325,000, I'm going to have some realtor fees and stuff. But then $150,000 more paying to contractor and renovation work and all that, which essentially my gain's just $150,000, which means I almost have to take another $150,000 that I don't have and put it into the property. Do you sort of see the dilemma?
Yeah, I understand what you're talking about. Now, there is the opportunity zone. The opportunity zone, you can just put the profit in and defer it until 2026. Now, with that, you get a 10% reduction in your gain. So if you have $150,000 gain, you only have to report $135,000 when in 2026. And if the new investment makes a lot of money, it's 100% tax-free. So it's not as great as a 1031 exchange, but it's got some benefits to it. So,
okay.
There are options for you. So
yeah.
don't give up on the whole concept. Make sure you understand all your options, understand what your taxes will be if you just sell it and take all the cash and so forth. And you can also do boot. You know, you can just take some boot. You can take some cash, pay some taxes on a portion and defer everything else.
Okay.
All right.
I might give your office a call and maybe set up a consultation on this.
That would be great. We'd love the opportunity to do that. And I'm not going to call you Steve if you call in, too. I'll call you Tim.
All right.
Take care, buddy.
Thank you for your time and knowledge, and have a great evening.
All right. Hi, this is Drew Tignanelli, the financial consultant, saying a financial advisor must have a tax planning passion. I'm appealing only to those with a net worth of more than $5 million or with taxable income of over $400,000. You are the target for higher and higher taxes. If you're in this elite club, you can no longer afford to have a financial advisor that is not passionate to minimize taxes. I'm appealing to you with income over $400,000 or a net worth greater than $5 million because you are the target and need the financial consultant's passion to minimize income taxes and estate taxes. Call to set up your introductory meeting, 410-823-7283 or 410-823-SAVE or online, financialconsulate.com. If your taxable income is $400,000 or more, or your net worth is over $5 million, you are the target. So call to begin your tax plan, 410-823-7283, or online, financialconsulate.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Yeah, there we go. Sly and the Family Stone. I love that song. Anyway, we're here on an open show, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680, if you want to call in and ask a question. We do have somebody, don't we, Alex?
Yep. 1031 Exchange has kind of got the wheels going for everybody here, so we have one more here. Pete from Centerville, how can we help you?
Well, I'll tell you something, you're just talking about 1031 Exchange. I'm 88 years old, so I've done a few 1031 Exchanges. And I consider those things at this point a fool's game.
I'll really? Why?
Why is this, in my opinion? Maybe I'm right, maybe I'm wrong. But the way that I look at it is this. There's only one way taxes are going to go from here on up. And when you do a 1031 exchange, you aren't making any money. You're just deferring the payment of taxes. Right?
Well, that's not 100% true, Pete.
What?
That's not 100% true.
How is that now?
Because if you die and they still have the step up in basis, all that deferred gain on the 1031 is gone.
Yeah, I understand. Okay. I get you.
But that's why a lot of people do them, is because they expect the step up in basis. But now you're bringing up an excellent point, though. And I'm going to give you absolute credit for this. This is a great point that Pete's making.
Joe, you're making
a $2 million profit. We have a client that was going to do a $5 million sale. They were making a $3.5 million profit. We thought about doing a 1031 exchange, and we said, wait a minute, if Joe Biden gets through a 43% tax increase to 43% on capital gains, what the hell am I going to defer this gain for when I'm going to pay 23.8% today?
That's
and
right.
So they took the gain and paid the taxes on it. So I see what you're saying. It's a great point.
Another point being is this. You have a limited time in which to identify the new purchase.
You have 45 days to identify three different properties. You have 180 days to settle on one of the three.
Yeah, but as I say, you're pushed into. I know a lot of people that have gone and they bought properties that weren't really worth the money because they were trying to avoid paying the tax.
But here's your thing, Pete, that these Delaware statutory trusts have changed the game big time for 1031 exchange.
Yeah.
Because now what you can do is you could sell your property, buy something like this, where somebody else is going to manage it, et cetera, for you. You're still going to make great little cash flow from it, fairly tax preference. You're going to defer all the gain. And if the step up in basis stays place, and if they don't cause taxation at 43% or something like that, it will turn out to be an excellent deal. For the last 50 years or so, that has been the situation. Now these new potential rules from political leaders that today make it dangerous to consider it. Doesn't make it ridiculous to consider it. Makes it dangerous to consider, and you got to consider all the options. But it was a great call. I appreciate the points you're making.
Yeah, one other thing.
Go ahead. One other question, real quick.
One other thing is this: did you buy an electric car?
Not yet, but I'm intending to.
Yeah, you're just thinking about it.
No, I'm intending to. I'm not thinking about it. I'm intending to.
You bought an electric car.
Not yet, but I'm intending to.
Okay. Well, let me ask you something. Is this? You know, you have to have a big storage battery there. I know a little bit about this because I just got into the solar panel business.
Right.
I'm just leasing my land for 150 acres for solar panels.
Right. You were telling us this a few weeks ago, I think, or you called in and told us this.
Yeah. But anyway, you have to have these big storage batteries, and all these cars you have to have them. And, of course, the big metal in those storage batteries is copper. And there's only so much copper in the ground. And what happens?
That's true.
When the copper's all used up?
Well, there's plenty of opportunity for, coming up, recycling copper. I'm sure there's plenty of copper out there. Yeah. But I hear what you're saying. But, to me, we got to go. We got to let everyone know that we're on the open show, 410-922-6680. If you want to call in and ask a question like Pete and direct the conversation, he's making some great points there. I'm not worried about the copper in the ground, et cetera, et cetera. I understand what he's saying. I mean, ultimately, we will run out of whatever is in the ground somewhere along the way. Who knows when it'll be? But me personally, I want to own an electric car. I don't want to go to a gas station. I don't like the coffee at the gas station. I get the coffee at the gas station because I want to have something to do while I wait for that stupid gas to pump in my car. I don't want to take a chance that gasoline gets all over my hands and my feet and or whatever. I'd rather have an electric car where I go home and plug the dang thing in and drive off the next morning. Not to mention an electric vehicle is far more efficient maintenance-wise than a combustion engine. That only makes absolute sense. You think about something rotating around because of electricity as opposed to something blowing up in your engine, moving these things up and down. It's only perfectly logical. So, anyway, we're on an open show. I don't think that's financial, is it, Alex?
No, but I think you can spin it that way. I was going to say you're waiting for that truck to come out, right?
Yeah, I like that. What's it called?
The Tesla or something.
No, is that what they call the Tesla truck?
Oh, not the Tesla. I'm talking the Ford one that's coming out.
Oh, the Ford one. The Tesla one's called like something like, really techie, like the Nitro or something. It's got this really cool name, and it's got like 100,000 of them already ordered.
Well, if it's Nitro, I expect them all to be a blaze red, everyone driving around with it.
They look like something out of one of those futuristic movies where the guy's driving around, he's like the last survivor on the earth. That's what the thing looks like. Yep. Anyway, we're on an open show, Alex, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680. There's nobody online now.
We've got one question here about stock options.
Okay.
Art in
That's
Delaware.
That's a cool idea.
What do you got going on?
Good evening to you both, and hope all is well. I just have a quick question about stock option fleets calls. I don't want to write any. But if you could just tell me about them and the risk. Because like Pfizer, long-term, 3 years, it looks like a really good buy. I mean, the strike price is like 40, and it's about a buck and a half right now for a two-year, hedge. So if you could just talk a little bit about
Well, wait a minute. Let me just make sure that you're talking about what you want me to talk about. So you want to buy a call option on Pfizer where you have the right to buy the stock at 40 for the next how many years?
2 years.
2 years? And you're saying, and what's the stock trading at right this minute?
I'm in the car, so I would know.
Alex, tell me Pfizer is trading.
Just as an example, if you could just talk about how that works and, how do you exercise it? I could take the answer off air.
All right, I'm going to do that for you. And let me just find out. Let me find out for me what Pfizer's trading at.
39.35.
There's no way that he's right on that.
No. I didn't check the price for
what. Oh, okay.
The show, and it's always intrigued me.
So let me explain. Let me explain this to you, okay? So you can go ahead and hang up on...
thanks, and have a great summer, guys.
All right, guys. Thank you. So I'm going to start. I'm going to do about a minute or so, and then I'm going to take a pause. And if I haven't finished, I'm going to give him the rest of it. So what he's talking about is a call option, and you can buy a call option on a stock like Pfizer. And Pfizer's currently trading at about $39 a share, and you can determine what price in the future you're willing to pay for the stock, or... Is it 50? Is it 45? Is it 40? Is it 35? Is it 55? Is it 60? And you could choose any one of those numbers up to a certain amount. And then you also have a time frame. You have a time frame of maybe 30 days, or you may have a time frame up to 2 years. I normally don't go much more than 2 years, but you can have a time frame of like 2 years. And so basically what you're doing is you're saying, tell me how much you want me to give you today to have the option to buy this stock from you between now and then, okay? So let's say they want $2 to buy the stock at 50 for 2 years. You can buy the stock from me anytime you want for $2. And if the stock goes above 50, obviously I'm going to buy it from you. But if the stock never goes above 50, they walk away with my $2 as just cash in their pocket and sit there and giggle that he was silly enough to give me $2 to buy this stock. Now, you hold on with me. We're going to go to traffic and we're going to come back and we're going to finish talking about how a call option gives you leverage, but the risk that you're also taking. All right. Right now we're on an open show, 410-922-6680. If you want to call in with a topic also, we can do it right after I finish explaining call options and so forth. But right now we're going to traffic. Hi, this is Drew Tignanelli of the Financial Consulate saying a financial advisor must have a tax planning passion. I'm appealing only to those with a net worth of more than $5 million or with taxable income of over $400,000. You are the target for higher and higher taxes. If you're in this elite club, you can no longer afford to have a financial advisor that is not passionate to minimize taxes. I'm appealing to you with income over $400,000 or a net worth greater than $5 million because you are the target and need the Financial Consulate's passion to minimize income taxes and estate taxes. Call to set up your introductory meeting, 410-823-7283 or 410-823-SAVE or online, financialconsulate.com. If your taxable income is $400,000 or more, or your net worth is over $5 million, you are the target. So call to begin your tax plan, 410-823-7283, or online, financialconsulate.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
All right, we're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're here on an open show. 410-922-6680. Yep. Chris is playing some music that I'm sure he has no idea as to who he's playing. Even though he can see it possibly there, he probably doesn't know like I do who that is. But we are going to keep it a secret from him. And we're going on to finish my talk on call options, though, right? So I don't want to forget that, okay? I'm going in and I'm saying I can buy Pfizer up to $50. I can buy Pfizer at $50 a share. And I got 2 years to do it. If the stock of Pfizer goes above $50 a share, then all of a sudden my stock option becomes worth something, in that two-year period. And the quicker it goes above it, the faster I'm making money. And but you see, here's the deal. If I buy Pfizer at $40 a share, 39 whatever, and it goes to 50, then I made 25%. I made $10 a share on a $40 investment. That's 25%. But if I buy the Pfizer options at $40 a share that I can hold on to until $50 a share, and only had to pay $2 to get it, and Pfizer goes to $55 a share, okay? Now all of a sudden I made 130% on my $2 investment, right? Because now my $2 that I paid to buy the stock at 50 is now all of a sudden worth 50. The stock's trading at 55, so my option has to be worth $5 a share, right? Because that's what it's worth. Because if you exercise your option, you could sell it for $55. So the option's worth about $5. I only paid $2 for it. So therefore, I got $3 in profit on a $2 investment. That's 133% profit, right? So you can see where the leverage comes into options. So if I buy something for 60 days, maybe, and I say $45 a share, they might sell it to me for 50 cents. Per contract, okay? So 50 cents, and all of a sudden the stock goes to 46, and now I'm at a buck. I made 100% profit just because stock went up $5 or $6 in a short period of time. And you see, this is the power of an option. I remember once I bought an option on the S&P 500 in 1991. I actually talked with Tom Marr in 1991, 2 weeks before the Iraq invasion, where we put up Desert Shield and did the Iraq invasion until Saddam backed down and so forth. And I said to Tom, I said, if they go into Iraq, the minute they do, the market will go up. And Tom said, it'd be amazing. I would expect the market to go down if all of a sudden you have a big military confrontation. I said, no, I think the market will go up because the market's already anticipated it going down if it has an invasion. It's already discounted that. So it'll do the opposite once it happens. And I had an option on it, and I put up like $1,000. And once they invaded, the market went up like 15 or 20%. But my option went from $1,000 to $10,000. You know, unfortunately, I covered it at like $15,000. And if I would have held it for like another 2 or 3 months, it would have been worth over $100,000, even though the market only went up about 30% in that 25 or 30% in that period of time. But that's the power of an option if you understand it. But the risk is that it doesn't go up and you lose 100% of your money. So there's where the option market comes into play, is that it's much more of a gambling concept than it is an investment concept. And I don't like to play with it very often unless I really feel that somebody's misinterpreting the market. And I've made some mistakes as well as I've made a good decision like that one. So anyway.
We're moving on to Steve and Timonium. What are you dealing with a home purchase?
I purchased this house 2 years ago, and it was an auction as is, and I knew that. And then all of a sudden, like a year and a half later, the tenant made a complaint to the county, so the county came out there, and a county agent realized that, because she was familiar with that home, that there was an addition put on that house prior to me purchasing that, and prior than the previous tenant purchasing that. And now I have to go ahead and hire engineers and all this stuff, and structural engineers, and apply for variances because I didn't know this in the beginning. And I know there's a title search, and I was just wondering if I could go back on anybody on this.
You could potentially try and talk to a real estate attorney and find out if you could go against the selling agent and the seller of the home for not disclosing that they had. But it depends on the contract you signed. If you signed a contract that said as is, and it was clearly 100% as is, you probably are going to have a hard road to, tough road to hoe. But it depends on how the contract was written as to whether you're going to be able to go back against them or not. But unfortunately, it's been a year and a half, so it's a long time. And I'm not sure what the statute of limitations are for real estate. But yeah, anytime you buy a house and you have a house that had an addition put on without permits and so forth, that's a risk you're running. So, if ever you go into a house that you're going to buy and you get any hint that possibly it was done, there was some renovations or so forth done without permits, you really want to be skeptical and get it checked out very carefully. So I wish I could give you better news.
Well, the house was built in 88 and they sold it in 2004. In 2004, it was already... all this work was done before they sold it to 2004. The 2004 owner, had problems and whatever, it went on auction. So I bought it about 2 years ago. And then about a year ago is when I found out
let me give you an example, okay? Let's say you buy a piece of property and you don't do the inspections on the piece of property, and all of a sudden you find out that the oil tank has been leaking into the ground well before you ever bought the property. You're responsible for the oil leak in the ground, even though you had nothing to do with it being there. So anytime you buy a piece of property, the minute you buy it, you assume all the liabilities all the way back to the day it was originally purchased if you're not careful about how you made your purchase. So I wish I could give you, I would strongly recommend, though, you find a good real estate attorney to talk to about this. Jeff Higdon, I think, could give you some good advice. He's a lawyer that we've used, does a lot of real estate work. He's a good guy. I'm sure he would hear you out and give you his opinion and let you know if he thinks he can help or not. Do you want his number?
I would love to have his number. Yes, sir.
410-828-1946.
And his name?
Jeff Higdon, H-I-G-D-O-N.
Okay, 410-828-1946.
That's it. I got to run.
Thank you very much.
Take care. Good call.
All right, Drew, we got Mark back again. He's catching us before every break here. If he sticks around, I guarantee we'll get to it next time.
Let's go for Mark. Are we going to him right now? Let's go to it.
All right, we'll go to him right now. Mark.
Mark, electric cars, how can we help you?
Hello. What kind of Tesla are you going to buy?
I'm not sure I'm going to buy a Tesla. I'm holding my options open and seeing how the battery and so forth works out. I didn't tell the person I was going to buy it immediately. I just said that I'm looking forward to buying it. I want some of the kinks worked out. So if I had to buy it right now, I'd buy the Tesla X. I love that Tesla SUV is a great car. If you've ever seen it, it's just a fantastic car. But
the one thing about Tesla, it's breaking all these records. But why isn't the stock moving?
Well, because it's already ridiculously overvalued, you know. So I don't know how much more you can go up if you're you here's a story to tell everybody, okay? General Motors traded for more in 1929 before the crash than it did in 19 I don't know that it ever got to a higher market capitalization. Or maybe it took until the 1960s to break that market capitalization in 1929. So just keep in mind that people can go up a lot well before they're really worth it. All right?
Yeah.
Good question. I got to run.
Bye-bye.
Well, what
Drew,
are we going to do?
You kind of segued me in a little bit there. I don't know if it was on purpose or not with the gambling and smart investing. I talked to you a little bit, you know, I was watching Netflix the other night trying to figure out the thousands of things. What's the one thing that we could decide on? And it was called Money Explained. And naturally, I clicked it and I just clicked the first episode and it was gambling.
Really?
And I thought, you know, all right, gambling, I know casinos, you can't find your way out.
We got to take a pause. We're going to be right back. Money, riches, and wealth.
Hi, this is Drew Tignanelli of the Financial Consulate saying a financial advisor must have a tax planning passion. I'm appealing only to those with a net worth of more than $5 million or with taxable income of over $400,000. You are the target for higher and higher taxes. If you're in this elite club, you can no longer afford to have a financial advisor that is not passionate to minimize taxes. I'm appealing to you with income over $400,000 or a net worth greater than $5 million because you are the target and need the financial consulate's passion to minimize income taxes and estate taxes. Call to set up your introductory meeting, 410-823-7283 or 410-823-SAVE or online, financialconsulate.com. If your taxable income is $400,000 or more, or your net worth is over $5 million, you are the target. So call to begin your tax plan, 410-823-7283, or online, financialconsulate.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
We're back, Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're here on an open show. My co-host is Alex Price, a young associate of ours that is doing a fantastic job and has been with... How have you been along with us? Four years?
Yeah, about four and a half now. Obviously, you got me out of Towson as the intern, and then just... I think I took maybe a weekend off and started full-time on Monday, and
And just got married a month or so ago.
Yeah, about 2 months. I'm not, what's the first anniversary I should be looking at? Do I have to do months anymore, or I can wait till year one?
that's a difficult one. That's a woman-by-woman basis there. Like, so you have to determine that one, you know.
We'll feel it out.
I've been married 39 years this year, and I still haven't figured it out. So every day I get a new education. So anyway, we're on an open show, 410-922-6680. If you want to call in and ask a question, anybody online there, Alex?
No, nobody just yet. And
so wait, I want you to explain this as to what's going on with gambling and what's happening, because it relates to the financial market. So go ahead and give it to us.
Yeah,
it's so really cool.
Yeah, so this documentary, you know, they talked, you know, what happened last year. It shut pretty much everything down that people were getting preoccupied with. Sports were gone. There was nothing happening. I'm sure there were some
So leagues. Couldn't gamble on sports.
Couldn't gamble on sports. Casinos were shut down. Nothing
so
you couldn't
go to the
there.
Casino and gamble.
So where did people kind of get their fix, or where did they kind of dive into? And, you know, mobile apps made it very easy and accessible to get into the stock market. They incentivized it from the get-go. I know some of them, you made an account, and I remember the visual on this documentary here. There were three grab bags with a question mark on them, and you got to choose one of them. And the one you chose, they gave you a share of a stock immediately just for signing up. They kind of got you in there. And so then you kind of wet your feet a little bit and you mess around on the app. And next thing you know, your phone's in your pocket and you hear a ring and you look at it. And it tells you, hey, that one stock that we gave you, it's gone up 20% today. Just wanted to let you know. Or it's gone down 15% today. Just wanted to let you know. And it's all just kind of wrapping you in and pulling you into the investing world. So when you talk about options and you know, the risk associated with it, you know, people just have to be smart. I think it's a great education tool. I think it's exposing a lot of people to it, but there's a responsible way to go about it.
But you see, what you told me earlier today, I thought was really important, is that these mobile apps and so forth, Robinhood and all these different types of companies that were luring the younger generation into the stock market, they were doing it and encourage them to actually do it as gamblers as opposed to investors. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, and I think that's just kind of where, and I'll say the younger crowd kind of pivoted their focus to. So whether or not they meant to, I'm sure there was some incentive behind it, but that's what it morphed into along the way.
Yeah, so, you know, what's the difference between, a lot of people think the stock market is gambling, and it can be, very absolutely. There are a lot of people who use the stock market as gambling, where they're just betting on the direction of a stock on a day-to-day basis. And that's what a day trader would be. A day trader is strictly a gambler. They're using some kind of gut feel or whatever, try to say, okay, this stock has got good momentum, so I'm going to bet on it for the rest of this afternoon, and hopefully I make 50 cents, and then I'm going to sell it and go on to the next stock and just keep doing that over and over. That's gambling. A real investor understands the company they're buying, wants to own the company, and is going to own it for 5 or 10 or 15 years and say, you know, I'm confident that this company is going to make a lot of money. I know what I own. I know why I own it. And I'm going to just buy it and hold it for a long, long period of time. That's the way an investor operates. A gambler bets on a short-term momentum move or something of that sort.
Yeah. And I think one of the factors that led into it being a problem is, for the most part, the popular things have gone up. So everyone's a genius. They bought this and it's now 30% higher than when they bought it.
That's funny that you say that, because you're a young man, but I remember Jim Rogers saying that about 30 years ago, and stuck with me ever since. He said everybody thinks they're a genius when the market's going up and they buy a stock and it makes money and they think, you know, hey, I'm a genius. Look at this. I've done this 5 times. I've done this 10 times. I've made 50,000. I've made 20,000. I've made 30,000. Then all of a sudden you get that pandemic come. Market drops by 35%. They lose everything and more than what they had, and all of a sudden they realized that they weren't as brilliant as they think they were.
Yep.
You know, but that's very common, and that's what happens to gamblers. I like to tell the story. I told it to Alex and a couple other people in my company, young people in my company, about Jesse Livermore. He, you know, there's a great book called Reminiscence of a Stock Trader. And if you ever want to read one book about personal finance, Jesse Livermore, Reminiscence of a Stock Operator is probably your greatest book you ever read. Why? Because Jesse Livermore, back in the 1910s and 1920s, they used to go to bucket shops. And what they did in a bucket shop is they bet strictly on the direction of a stock on a day-to-day basis. And they didn't own the stocks. They just bet on the direction. They bet on IBM, and they bet on General Motors, and they bet on General Electric, and they bet on 3M, and they bet on the direction of the stock. And at the end of the day, you all evened up with everyone, and some people walked away with a lot of money, and some people lost a lot of money. And that's what Jesse Livermore did day in and day out for years and years. But the problem was he made millions, and then he would lose millions. And then he would make millions, and then he lost millions. And he made millions, and he lost millions. Third time he lost it was like 1945 or 46 or something like that. And he committed suicide. He just couldn't handle it because he was so old that he realized he could never do this again. And he was basically desolate. And that's what happens to gamblers. Gamblers end up in those situations. So anyway, Alex, we got a caller.
We got one question here. Earl in Northwestern Baltimore.
How you doing?
Doing great, and you?
Oh, yeah, pretty good. I have a question for you, Drew. You know, I know it's investment. Twitter is a stock, and I was wondering, how come the analysts always put it down very much? They don't like it for some reason.
The who?
The analysts, they don't like Twitter, the stock Twitter, like, which is like Facebook. They don't like it. It sounds like they're very they think it's not a good stock.
Because Twitter hasn't really figured out how to make revenue out of their platform. And Facebook and Google and other companies like that, I mean, they know how to make revenue, big time revenue out of their platform.
But it's been a long time, Twitter, hasn't it?
It has, but, you know, tell me how they're going to make a lot of revenue out of it. You know, you don't sell advertisements that easily on Twitter. You don't, you're not going to charge people a service fee to, like Netflix does, of $10 a month or whatever the case may be and so forth.
I mean,
you're not
going to. I know it's whatever it does, even if it goes up $5, a couple of dollars, they always put it down. It's always so low.
But there's a problem with Twitter, and Twitter doesn't have a technique yet to develop revenue.
Jack Dorsey keeps on moving around.
Jack Dorsey's is an interesting individual. It's the least you can say about the guy.
Yeah.
Or I should say it's the best you can say about the guy.
Okay, I have another question for you, Drew, if I can ask you.
Yeah.
When they say there's a float, what does that mean exactly, a float on stocks? What does that mean?
Well, I'm not sure what you're saying, but let's say a company has 100 million shares.
Yeah.
And 50 million are held by the public and traded in the public exchanges. Mm-hmm. So that's the float of the stock. And then the other 50 million may be held privately by Jack Dorsey, or might be held privately by a big inside insider who took the company public with Dorsey 30 years, five or so years ago. So you can have an outstanding stock of 100 million, but there may only be 50 million that's traded publicly because there's big insiders that hold huge positions of the stock.
Let's say Apple, that has a big float.
Apple, almost every share of Apple is publicly traded.
Okay,
there's a small.
So the bigger the float, that means the more popular the stock is.
Well, you think of the float, that's how much of the stock is publicly being traded in the market of the outstanding shares.
From you want to call up.
All right. Good question, Earl. Okay. So we're almost out of time, Alex. And, you're a Dolphin fan, Ricky Fowler fan, and then you tell me you're a Cub fan at the break. So.
Yep, you'll have to stick around until next time. I'll start to explain some of these weird team choices.
Anyway, Alex, I got to go. Great having you. This is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless.
Jolly people you love with love. Show them the way you feel.
are gonna be much better.